That's why we're here, bro. This is real tech talk. Boom shakalaka. So who the hell are you, bro? You know, what are you into? What do you do?
Yo, you can keep it real here. Tell me. Tell me about these real estate players.
Eric Brody is the managing principal of CEMVC LLC. All opinions expressed by Eric and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of CEMVC LLC. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of CEMVC LLC may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Welcome back to Real Tech Talk, episode number 33. Today, we are talking about the application of artificial intelligence on real estate. Now, who I brought today is absolutely incredible in this space. Not a real estate-based person, but I have forced him to create an AI specifically for my real estate business, and he has now had to get a crash course in real estate. But we're here to explain to my audience how, first, what is AI? And then second, how is AI's application to real estate either going to change the game? Is it fact? Is it fiction? We are here with the foremost expert in my universe on it, my homeboy Vikram. Everyone clap it up for him.
Thank you.
Vikram, thank you so much for coming. Now, let's briefly tell the audience a bit about your background. I'm going to give some high level, and then you'll tell us about kind of how you got into it. Okay? Vikram. Harvard Business School graduate, nightclub owner, real estate owner, created 200 applications for the healthcare business. Right or wrong?
Yes.
So what is this fascination with being an entrepreneur and then in technology, and how'd you get into AI?
I suppose my first love is learning, and I'm always attracted to whatever the latest and greatest unsolved mysteries are, so to say.
Which is crazy because, like, I'm trying to just, like, keep up with what's happening inside my brain. You're making the attempt to solve the world's greatest issues each time there's a new one. So let me guess, you did some massive blockchain at some point.
I did. The last 10 years or so, I spent a lot of time in blockchain crypto. I used to run an accelerator here in partnership with Techstars, focused on blockchain and crypto. And then before that, as you mentioned, I spent over a decade in the pharmaceutical healthcare industry. And now I'm also working on a company called Longevity Lab that's bringing the tools and knowledge to our customers to get to first a healthy 100, and then hopefully, we're organizing this big party for December 31st, 2099, and that's for our community.
That's amazing. And I'd like the audience to be clear. Joe Rogan has AG1. Real Tech Talk now has Longevity Labs, people. We're like a junior Rogan. Longevity Labs is going to be all over this.
Absolutely.
You know? And I'm going to be the experiment of getting to 120. So I'm super excited about that. But we'll get into that later. So now tell me, you attack all the latest issues, the latest fad, which I don't believe to be a fad. I think a game changer is AI. But why is it that you're the credible source when it comes to your expertise in AI? Where does that come from? Where does that diving in? Where is that tech background coming from?
So I have a very broad experience and perspective, and I think to understand things deeply, you need that broad perspective. I have traveled in over 50 countries. I've managed businesses across 5 continents. I've personally hired, over 1,000 engineers. I have, as you mentioned, not most people, who are in tech are just in tech. I actually, my first job or my only job out of college, I was a stockbroker. I was a Series 7, 63, et cetera, like, you know, sort of one of those guys yep. making 300 cold calls a day up in the World Trade Center back then. You know, I've spent 3 years in East Africa distributing medicines where no infrastructure exists. You know, so I have a very broad set of experiences that gives me the understanding of humans, of the human condition, of human intelligence, and how artificial intelligence changes everything.
And I got to tell you, not to toot my own horn, but I'm the beneficiary of getting to meet such incredible humans like yourself who have had 19 lives. And now I get to ask you these questions. So I'm fucking excited.
Thank you.
All right. So now let's get into, fine, that's the background. So tell us, how did you attack and why this AI game? And then we'll go into explain what it is. So why AI? And then how did you go about learning what you needed to know about AI to be dangerous in the game?
So AI, artificial intelligence, like what is intelligence? Intelligence is the ability to accumulate knowledge and skills and then apply them to solve problems.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
And normally you know, intelligence abounds all around us, including in some of us, right? As well as
some,
you know,
more than others.
Some more than others, right? And as you know, in animals and fish, you know, even a worm finds food, so it has some level of intelligence. And now it's the first time in human history that machines are acquiring that capability. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, instead of organic intelligence, now we have artificial intelligence.
Wait, can we just go back to intelligence? Yeah. Some of it is genetic, though, right? Are you saying that intelligence isn't just the genetic? It's what we learn after genetics?
No, it's both. It's both. So what I said was it's the ability to learn skills and knowledge. So, you know, when you say it's genetic, that means it's present in the hardware that we have, that we are born with.
Okay.
And then we use that hardware on top of it to, you know, program in the software, so to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that's the intelligence. And you're saying now the basic definition then of artificial intelligence would be that we've created machines that can do the same thing. We can give a set of, and I'm going to mess it up because the second I say a set of rules, you're going to say no, right? So how would you define in the simplest terms now what this artificial intelligence is? And then we could talk about its application to real estate.
So at the most basic level, artificial intelligence is a software program that mimics human intelligence. And by human intelligence, again, I mean the ability to learn skills, knowledge, to solve problems, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you know, everyone's familiar with ChatGPT.
Yeah, and is that the first, I guess, proliferation of artificial intelligence? It's not, right? But it's the first mainstream one?
It's the first one that has really caught the mainstream attention in a way. I think it got to like 100 million users within a month.
And is that a record?
That is a record in technology. Yeah. And so what they did, for example, right? So they used you know, these software programs called transformers, and using that program, they are into that program, they then fed in the world's knowledge. So they've taken the entirety of the text of the internet, every page written, pretty much everything.
As long as it was binary, as long as it has been digitized, right?
Even things that were not digitized, they went and digitized it. They hired armies of, like, you know, I've seen ads they were putting out in countries in Africa, paying $1, $2 an hour for people just to create this training data
so
for these engines.
So the engine needs data. That is the
that is the secret to all of its success, is basically somehow there has to be this massive data dump.
Yes.
So, and that data dump was the language.
It's been both language as well as images, videos. So you know, in kind of like layman's terms, this happens. It's a lot of sense making from patterns, right? So if you ask ChatGPT, is like, hey, I have the sniffles. I was out playing this afternoon. From all the things that it has seen before, it's gonna like put correlations like and say, hey, maybe you have allergies. Right? And it's all based on correlations between various things that it has seen before.
And that is learning. That is intelligence.
That is one aspect of intelligence.
Okay. So this and because it captured society's consciousness, that's why it's now mainstream, basically. Because I assume in the past, these models were trying to be developed. So what was it that was the catalyst? Is it these massive data centers or the ability for computers to process information that has changed the game? Like, why is this relevant today and not 20 years
so
ago?
So two things. One is, I think you may be asking, why did ChatGPT catch the world's attention?
Yeah, that now real estate and other industries are now in fear of what the change is.
Yeah, so... what OpenAI did there was, so OpenAI's capabilities, the API, actually existed for, you know, I think 18 months or...
And what's API?
API is the application programming interface. So ChatGPT is an actual, is essentially an application built on top of their, of the software program running on their supercomputer.
And that has those massive amounts of data that we discussed before.
Yeah. But that existed 18 months before ChatGPT. ChatGPT was released to the public December 1st of 22. Mm-hmm. And the reason this caught the world's attention in the way that it did is it allowed people to converse. Like, you know, humans love to talk. You know, communication is our number thing. Communication and, you know, if you think about it, like humans, you know, like if you look out in the savannah, right, 100,000 years ago, we had no superpowers. We're like, we can't run, we don't have muscles, etc. We had one superpower, which was we could gather together and collaborate like mm-hmm. nobody's business, and all that relies on communication. ChatGPT, for the first time, allowed you to talk to a computer as if it were another human being, and that really captured the world's attention.
Right, because it finally, in your world, you're like, look, I've been talking to computers for a while. I know how to translate that information, whether it was coding or whatever the mm-hmm. case may be. Now it's like, no, all of you no longer have to do that. You could just ask or communicate in the way you want, and you're saying that captured sort of the general population psyche.
Absolutely. It 100x the number of people who could directly interact with AI.
Fascinating.
And so the other question, which was probably underlying your previous question, was basically, why now?
Yeah.
And that has to do with hardware processing capability. So all of this requires supercomputers. So when you type something and send it to ChatGPT, what you are doing is essentially you're getting a little time slice of the usage of a supercomputer. So this massive computer program is running on this massive computer. In Microsoft's data center, and they use these chips made by NVIDIA, the A100s and now the H100s, and they can do trillions of calculations per second. So it's a function of
capacity.
It's a function of hardware processing capacity.
And what's interesting is just anyone, you should Google NVIDIA, you know, they're up billions upon billions of dollars if they're curious as to what was the sort of catalyst for all of this.
Absolutely.
All right. So now, and I get it, and I appreciate your ability to explain it to me, because as people have tried to, you know, it's not necessarily so easy to do. So I think that's something that the audience may want to understand is, what were the, and when this applies to real estate, and then we'll get into specific real estate, but explain briefly the difference between artificial intelligence and what people's perception where they thought they were communicating, but it really the application was a rules-based engine, right? Because that's sort of what was before. So what has changed from pre-using AI? It was a rules-based engine. What did that mean? And now what's the difference? And then let's get into its application to real estate.
Okay, so in a rules-based engine, basically...
And what's a good example of a massive tech or application that people would know to have an analogy to a rules-based engine? Is Uber a rules-based engine?
I guess something that most people would be familiar with is basically how airlines price tickets.
Okay.
Or hotels price hotel rooms, right?
Cool. Yeah.
They obviously are trying to maximize their revenue.
Oh, or what about RealPage's controversy with fixing rents, that they were able to drive rents because they had all of the information and data? Would that be an application, or you haven't heard of it?
I have not heard of it, but it's pricing. Price fixing. So it's all of these are price fixing methods. Whether it's hotels, whether it's apartment rents, whether it's airline seats.
So break down how we would price an airline ticket.
Okay.
What is the what makes it a rule?
So 20 years ago, right? So it was all rules based, where you essentially had things like, you know, based on how full a plane is, based, you know, the price would change based on what is the how much in advance the person is purchasing a ticket, based on whether it's a direct flight, based on
it's an if then.
Basically, correct.
And if it's an if, then what did they base it on, though? What before they made the rule, mm-hmm. they just knew occupancy rates and time.
They just know that basically, let's say if you're buying a ticket 4 months in advance versus buying a ticket a week in advance, you know, in the latter case, the need is probably more urgent, so they are going to extract more money out of you.
Correct.
If you're flying a direct flight, again, they're going to try to extract more out of you. If the
for convenience
for yeah, if the plane is full, they're going to try to extract more out of you because you probably have limited number of choices, et cetera, et cetera. So all of these rules, and you can have hundreds of them, basically comprise what's called a rules-based engine.
And that was sort of this internet 1.0, or is that 2.0?
No, that is 1.0.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in that same example, mm-hmm. what would now, if AI was applied to it, would there be a difference?
So with AI, you don't have to actually define or even know what the rules are. You basically give it examples of where you were able to extract more money. So in this case, this was less profitable. In this case, this was more profitable. In this case, less revenue, you know, both top line and bottom line, right? You give it examples. And then the AI itself creates internally these correlations that, you know, that could be it, maybe one of them was the period of time,
right.
You know, how far in advance,
right? But you don't know it now, it's unnecessary.
It's unnecessary. And you know, before you had 1,000 rules, now the AI itself has millions of internal rules
in a millisecond.
But the problem is, problem only in some cases, is you don't know what those rules are.
Yeah.
You don't know why it's doing what it's doing.
which is, you know, everyone's fear in Terminator and iRobot, right? We're actually doing you a favor, right?
Yes,
human.
Yeah.
All right. So then I did for the first time ever, I made you do homework. And that homework was, what do you think the applications to real estate are? And then I don't want to forget, I want to hear your honest opinion as to, do you think that it's a fad or you better pay attention when it comes to AI and its real impact? Because you're starting to see articles where they're like, don't be concerned, okay? Mm-hmm. So we said in real estate, development, finance, design, sales and marketing, building and regulations. These were the topics that we had come up with. So go briefly through, let's just go briefly through the list as to like a precursor, because this will be a 4-hour podcast if we really dive deep, and that's not what we do. So you explained AI, you explained your history. Now, how would AI be applied to real estate development?
So first we dive, before we dive into real estate, I think it's worthwhile to get like a sort of a first principles look at how, you know, humans need resources to survive. And there are three options for that. Either you have assets. Most of the world doesn't have assets.
Wait, will you explain first principles? I mean, I know what it is, but explain it to the audience. Breaking down to its simplest building blocks this argument so that we can now expand upon it.
We can expand
upon it. Okay, so three things. Humans need resource, which is money today.
Any sort of – humans need resources to survive. Can we agree on that?
Yes.
Right. So basically, either those there are three possibilities how a human gets those resources. One is you have assets or somebody's taking care of you. So it's the same thing. 90%.
I prefer someone taking care of me, but you know.
Yeah.
Anyone needed to support me, feel free.
Yeah.
Yep.
The other two possibilities are, you know, we sell physical labor.
Right.
Or we sell cognitive labor.
Right. And it's physical labor for that resource, cognitive labor for that resource. Example, labor on a construction site or architect, right? That would be a cognitive labor, right? Because it's not physical.
Yeah, yeah.
And they get a fee for that.
And most labor is a combination of cognitive and physical, but there's a preponderance of one versus the other.
Gotcha.
Right? A bricklayer is mostly physical labor.
It is cognitive in how he's going to lay the brick, the bond beams, and how he's going to move forward, but that's just a minor percentage.
Yeah, yeah. And for a designer or for a financier, it's mostly, you know, cognitive labor.
Correct.
Now, you know, if you look at the arc of humanity over the last few hundred years, the price of physical labor has been in free fall, you know, with the arrival of machines, you know, how all these manufacturing jobs basically.
Oh, you're saying the physical has so far been attacked, right? Where if machines can come in, we need less physical.
Absolutely. Basically,
the Industrial Revolution, right?
The entire Industrial Revolution, basically, that eliminated that. And
by the way, I just want to hard stop for a second. Mm-hmm. Guys, everyone who's listening right now, you're welcome. Okay? Go on. I'm sorry.
Yes. So the price of that over the last 100 years or 200 years has already fallen so low that most of us cannot sell enough physical labor to survive, to get the resources to survive. So most of us for the last however long have been living off of cognitive labor.
Right, doctor, lawyer, right? That's what everyone's telling you. Be an accountant, right? Got you. Amazing.
Absolutely.
Now we understand sort of modern trends, right? I mean, that's why everyone's like, go to business school, go to law school, right?
Yep,
create that cognitive labor, because that's the resource that was value in our modern society.
Yep. And what artificial intelligence is doing is putting downward pressure on intelligence. Cognitive labor is you're selling your intelligence. And with artificial intelligence is driving the price of intelligence down to zero.
I would like to see that. You know, I want to give a real world example. I went to get an MRI. I hurt my back.
Mm-hmm.
And they also do sonograms there. Mm-hmm. And for an extra $40, you can have an AI review your sonogram, right?
Yeah.
And for $40, you can have this, like we said, supercomputer processing images. Like, I'd take that bet any day for the $40.
Absolutely. And it's putting a lot of radiologists out of business.
It makes sense.
So the first, I would argue that the price of intelligence peaked in the 90s. And that was when, you know, the internet bandwidths got connected and, you know, the globalization, you know, for knowledge workers really started.
Mm-hmm.
When I first moved to the U.S., right, I remember I could hire the smartest guys coming out of IIT New Delhi for $1,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. So you were outsourcing your programming.
Basically,
or engineering.
I could hire them and I could sell their services here for, you know, $150, like $1,500 a day.
Right. So you were really in that game of cognitive labor outsourcing and making the arbitrage on the difference.
Yes, I was doing that arbitrage. But basically just because those, you know, the reason that arbitrage existed was the two supplies of intelligence, the one in America and one in India, were not connected.
Mm-hmm.
But when those got connected, and that's what happens in any, you know, arbitrage situation, downward pressure started. And, you know, to the point that 10 years later, from like 95 to 2005, you know, meaningful arbitrage opportunities had disappeared. And, you know, I got out of that business at the time. But my point is, since 95, that's when basically the price of intelligence peaked. And after that, it's been on a downward.
Yeah, but that curve is now an opposite swoosh. It's diving now.
Yeah. First, due to connecting all the supplies of intelligence from all over the world coming together into one pool of intelligence. And now it was with the machine learning. And now with the arrival of generative AI, LLMs, and et cetera,
what's that acronym?
Large language model. Yeah, it's essentially going down to zero. So anyway, with my point with you know, that long-winded sort of point there
was fascinating, but yes,
was that it's not a fad. It's you know, it's an existential, you know, sort of wake up call for humans.
Okay, so what do you think then? How does the human pivot? And then I'll give analogies into real estate. What do you think is now the human's responsibility? Where, if it's not cognitive and physical, where should then we pay attention?
I don't know. I don't have the answer. And the what?
How dare you?
AI basically enables you to do is massive leverage. And basically before, you know, even if you were the richest person in the world, you could have the, you know, most resources and you still needed to hire tens or hundreds of thousands of people. Now you don't need that. Basically, those humans are out of the game. So this will lead to unprecedented concentration of wealth and power.
Or maybe we're hoping the reallocation of, because now we can compete.
That is also true. You will see the, you know, arrival of basically single person companies that do $100 million. And basically I would definitely predict within 10 years, we will see a single person company that does $1 billion. In revenue.
And I think it's just important that the public know that Vikram is my homeboy and he is looking at my company, which is also in the rescue capital real estate development space, where we are applying these first order principles. We don't have to give him the secret sauce right now. We could talk about other entities strictly because he sees and agrees that we can do that and we're a small shop. And I don't want to give away my secret sauce as to how we're doing it, but obviously, you see the opportunity.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's talk about what you see. Just, and this is cursory, right? In development. What do you think briefly AI can accomplish?
So As a developer, you're basically trying to assess demand. You know, first of all, predict where the market is going, use any kind of, neighborhood data, transportation data, demographic data to, determine those trends and prime locations.
Agreed.
Where should you build?
So you're saying AI, because we just said it. It's not rules-based, which is probably what historically was. If demographic trends are going this way, and it's you took 20 variables, 100 variables, the best probably do 20 variables. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, that's the next area. You're saying, no, let's put in historic trends, hit enter, and it's going to make – you're not even going to know why, but these are the areas you should be building today. Or, give you some insight into.
Yes. And AI has the ability to ingest vast troves of data. So it's not just basically the neighborhood trends, but it'll also, can overlay on top of that climate change data. It can overlay on top of that, economy. It can overlay on top of that the pressures on dollar from, the Russian invasion.
Correct.
And, whatever China is always up to. So
it can create more variability. But I just want to go back because that's not happening tomorrow. It's the data upload that still hasn't occurred specifically for that space. So it's like the person with the data today is at an advantage because that means that the AI intelligence can learn off of that data the bigger the data set.
Correct. The data exists, but it's in disparate sources, needs to be put together, and it's, AI is like 90% obtaining data, cleaning data, all of that. It's like grunt work. It's not sexy.
Right. Okay, cool. Let's say about real estate finance.
With real estate finance, things like new models of ownership, right? So for example, the arrival of mobile computers and GPS, right, enabled Uber. It enabled Airbnb, these new ownership models. I think the arrival of AI as a trusted intermediary will come up with new ownership models. That's one.
What about design?
In finance also, it's not just ownership models. It's, people are assessing risk. People are evaluating deals, sourcing and identifying deals. You're managing investment portfolios, finding investors, basically,
I see a future where the investor tells you your problem before you even know it exists because AI told them first, That sounds awful. All right, what about design?
Design, basically what AI lets you do is, things that used to take days and weeks. Now AI, and you can ask an AI engine and it'll like render it.
Yeah, I want to give an example because me and you sat down and just was fucking around with it. So I said, okay, New York City, 50 by 100 lot, low density, using a facade of these materials. We hit enter and it just gave you ideas. No one's saying that that is not what the architect will eventually design. Mm-hmm. But if we were just, we could ask it like, what you think would be the most expensive, least expensive design for this demographic, and boom, it's giving you, you're not exactly sure why, mm-hmm. but it's giving you examples to work from.
Absolutely, and it can iterate, in seconds. That's the, and that is putting people out of work. That's, that's the flip side of it. For example, I used to have designers and illustrators on call. For my, for my work, I don't really use them anymore.
There's this an interesting book by this guy, John Gaddis, called On Grand Strategy, which just talks about the more variability you can ingest to come up with an answer, usually you're much closer to being right. So anyone who says, oh, it's just this or one or two variables, always loses to the one who can ingest thousands or hundreds of thousands of variables. Like, we can't compete. We have to just connect with. So that was cool. All right, what about in sales and marketing? We're seeing that. Actually, this is where I think we are seeing it. I mean, I see brokers using AI for communication, sort of driving people down the funnel. But where else do you think in sales and marketing?
So in sales and marketing, one, you know, hyper-personalization of, you know, as a buyer or a seller, what you are looking for. 24/7 communication between agents and, you know, buyers or sellers, mm-hmm. using VR to basically reduce the distance between a physical visit and just like a digital visit. As virtual staging
in seconds.
In yes,
based on who you are, right? You know. Family of four, family of two, right? Like immediate. Everyone, like you, no longer are you asking someone to render anything. You could do 10,000 within just your specific niche. I want to do my modern furniture. Like you could anything quickly and you could basically see what you could be living in quickly, right?
Yeah. As well as over the years, just analyzing, you know, getting feedback. One of the things I've seen in, you know, I've been living in New York City a long time. Over the years, I've bought 5 different apartments, and all of them were in like new developments. And, you know, they, when they sell you something, they sell you a vision, and 10 years, 20 years later, that vision hasn't materialized.
What? But, really? No.
And, you know, I don't see any attempt on the part of the, you know, the companies, developers that built it to constantly gather data from people and how to improve.
Oh, forget it. Dude, we deal with it in construction and development every day. I've been doing this 30 years. When that guy retires on the 31st year, his whatever you've learned is gone.
Yeah.
It's gone. Totally gone. Right? So I agree with you. That's fascinating. And the guys that do have it are these really successful developers who are trying their best to record that data.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you're learning about, and that's the ones you hear about.
You touched upon an interesting point in the corporate world. There's something called institutional knowledge, right? And the institutional is, you know, one of the things that always fascinates me is why do people keep making the same mistakes again and again. You know, for example, in the, you know, the same, for example, the VCs, they'll, you know, in the 80s, they will make the same mistakes in biotech. Then in the 90s, they'll make the same mistakes in tech. It's, and then in, you know, OOs, yeah. They'll make.
Sure. Or this last one in prop tech, where everyone was inserting money and it was like, we're not sure exactly what they do, but it sounds hot, right? And I feel like that happens.
And you think they would have learned their lesson. But the thing is, the people who learned the lessons in the 80s are no longer the ones making the mistakes in the 90s or the 2000s. Different set of people making the same mistakes again because the human brain has the same blind spots and biases.
Right.
Now, with AI augmenting institutional knowledge, all of that will change. And what that means is basically the environment becomes hyper-competitive. It becomes very difficult to displace incumbents.
Which I just would like to be clear. I feel like that is the opportunity today. That is the innovator's dilemma. You keep seeing the head of the comet in real estate paying attention to technology, but the long tail, who I represent, doesn't have the capacity to do so. But what we're saying here today is learn and incorporate, because you have this opportunity over the next 10 years to displace those incumbents and you become that incumbent, or almost like the transfer of wealth could be happening right now.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you, you know, the world GDP today, or at 2020, and you know, was $105 trillion, right? That's the sum total of all the production.
Gotcha.
Production in the world.
I saw that graph, by the way, on LinkedIn. Oh, it's like okay. China and United States are like 21 and like 22, and then there's everyone else.
Yeah, yeah. And world wealth today is at 500 trillion. So that, you know, that sort of correlation has existed where it's like, you
one
know.
To five, what, five to one,
yeah,
whatever.
You know, four to one, five to one. But if you go back the last 50 years, right? So basically during the, you know, during the 70s or basically world GDP was growing by like 1 trillion. 80s, it was like 1 or 2 trillion. 90s, it was 1 or 2 trillion. During the 2000s, every year it's been like, you know, growing by 1 or 2 trillion. And I know that basically, you know, because the base was changing, et cetera. So it's not an exact comparison,
gotcha.
but you know, there's a point I'm trying to make.
There is a point you're trying to make?
Yes.
Oh, here we go.
You will find it. In 21, GDP grew by 10 trillion. In 22, GDP grew by another 10 trillion.
So orders of magnitude more.
Orders of magnitude more growth. And all of this, these were the early sparks of artificial intelligence. And, you know, my prediction is that in the next 10 years, there will be a year when the world GDP grows by 100 trillion.
Good. I just need like 1%.
So that's the entire GDP of the world today, and that's equal to 500 trillion in wealth.
That's amazing. Listen, Vikram, please shout everyone out on what you're doing now on Longevity Labs, because we've done more than enough. Everyone better download this, read through these concepts. It was not our job to tell them exactly how it's going to impact real estate. They can come back and we'll find those technologists that are attacking each of the things that we discussed. But tell them where they're going to find you on Longevity Labs, because you're into, with your brain applying this, you're going into extending human life, and let them know where to find your stuff and how to get in contact with you.
Absolutely. Before we jump off, I think real estate is probably the last multi-trillion dollar industry that's still out there with like no tech.
Yeah, Vikram, stop telling them. You're mine, okay? The second me and you blow up, we could tell everyone all about it, okay? We don't need them coming at us now, okay? Let's prove it out the thesis.
Oh, bring them on. Bring them on.
Fine, we'll bring them on, all right? As long as they're coming under us, they can come on, okay?
So AI is going to massively change from like 3D printing. Think about it. Like, what else in your home or in the world is actually manufactured on spot? Is your refrigerator manufactured on spot? No. But your apartment and home is, right? Mm-hmm. So all of that changes in the coming 10 to 20 years. Real estate is the biggest opportunity out there.
Oh, we know.
Not the biggest. Okay. The biggest is health tech. Over the last like 50 years, they've been what I call the consumer tech economy. People coming out of the big, you know, the Second World War, people were buying cars and TVs and fridges and phones and this and that. You know, consumer buying drove that. The coming few decades are what I call the health tech economy. People are now going to be basically live, you know, be smarter. Have, you know, a better heart.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
like
better skin.
Fitness hack and biohacking.
Absolutely. And, you know, AI, human body has been too complex of a machine for humans to self-hack. But AI, you know, we have, you know, AI now. We'll have AGI, which is artificial general intelligence, kind of like the median human, available within a few years. And we'll have ASI, artificial super intelligence, that's a million times smarter than you and I, probably within 10 years.
That's great. And now I get you with Longevity Labs making me live longer. I get to take your brain and apply it to my real estate. So this is awesome. I really appreciate you coming on, man. You're amazing. And I knew it would be a great show. And I really do appreciate you. And the way to find you, though, is on LinkedIn, right? Let me answer it for you.
Yes. LinkedIn and, you know, Longevity Lab. We're still in a closed pilot. We haven't even launched the website yet, but
if you can see my skin,
yes.
and how I feel. You know, it's changing. So listen, everyone, it'll be on the on our podcast when it drops. You got to find him. You know, you can't steal his time. Only I can. But listen, I really appreciate you coming on. You're the man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Wow. I mean, come on now. Why do you think you're listening in? We're now at the forefront of the way in which it's changing. You heard the guy, first order principles, stating what the past history was and what that future trajectory is. I'm lucky enough to be with these guys, making them make that application to my real estate business and just watch us over the next few years as to what we do. But listen again to that podcast and listen to it again. That is where this is going. And I'm tired of the top, the head of the comet, getting all the information and not being able to apply it to win in their business. We've got to pay attention, mid-market peeps, and that's why you pay attention to Real Tech Talk, episode 33 with my boy Vikram. Pay attention. Oh, by the way, you like and subscribe. And again, I'm not getting the love in these streets, people. I'm going to be in Vegas coming up at the Blueprint. You better come in there. And again, say what's up to the big man. I ain't playing with you. Peace.